Now, Christmas is above all a time for sharing. Not just the presents, the food and the drink, but above all, sharing the company of our closest families and friends. It's a time to relax and put the cares of the world behind us for a few days as we relive the miracle of the Holy Family in that stable in Bethlehem. But what about those who are far from their families and friends this Christmas? Those for whom the words "peace on earth, goodwill to all men" ring rather hollow, perhaps, as they patrol some of the most dangerous war zones of the world. What comfort can service men and women find in the familiar prayers and Christmas carols that somehow bring them closer to other Christians marking this same feast in cathedrals, churches and chapels all over the globe?
Our people do turn to church on these occasions. They might not be filling church throughout the year, but on these key moments like Christmas and Easter, and perhaps when there is some reason within their military unit for them to get together, they do appreciate coming together to sing a few carols, to say a few prayers, to reflect upon the duty that they carry out on our behalf to make peace and bring peace and maintain peace in different nations.
As Bishop to the Armed Forces in Great Britain, Bishop Thomas Byrne has met with service men and women in Iraq and other frontline places where British troops are stationed. He's very well aware of the problems they face over the festive season and the way in which their chaplains can provide vital support in the most difficult moments.
Yes, indeed. I mean, any absence from home is a difficulty for our service people and their families and loved ones back at home, but this is heightened in a special way when they are away over the Christmas period. And Christmas, of course, being a time for families and young people, they feel it even more, because if you're in a military camp in the middle of the desert or in Iraq or in the difficult mountainous regions of Afghanistan, you do miss the normal domestic pleasures and relaxation of being at home.
Are there any particular initiatives that are going on that you know of this year in Britain to try and keep morale up over this time?
There are always, at this time of year, or that time of year of Christmas, but also during the year, there are opportunities for making contact with home by telephone, and also there are improved email facilities, access to the internet, so that there can be exchange with people at home, and even direct changes given the telephone nature of computer technology nowadays also. And that's very, very much appreciated. I mean, I do know of one person who has a very small tape recorder, and he will record every second of the phone call that he has with his family, and then afterwards he plays it privately to himself in his own quarters, and that means a lot to him.
You must encounter in this situation soldiers who perhaps suffer from quite serious depression, maybe particularly at this time of year, as you say, given the way that Christmas means so much for families. Do you have to deal with this on a regular basis?
Not on a regular basis. I think it's true to say that our servicemen and women nowadays do witness some terrible atrocities in various parts of the world, and they need somehow afterwards to be able to release their pent-up emotions, their frustrations, and sometimes their disappointments that they were not able to do anything effectively at that time to relieve a difficult situation. So they need to talk to somebody afterwards, and of course their chaplain is present. He knows them already. They know him. There's no need to have any icebreakers, and they can, in confidence, feel able to talk to him about what is bothering them, and that very often turns them round and helps them to go back into the job that they're there for and cope for a while longer, although they may come back again for further conversations with the chaplain. And they may also require some medical support, and that is of course available to them also. And I think there's a sort of teamwork available to let them feel that different people are concerned about them and want them to function as well as they can and get over these difficulties.
Now, as you say, in places like Iraq, soldiers will be witnessing the most terrible atrocities, civilians dying in the streets, in their homes and so on. Does this ever lead, in your experience, to a real loss of faith, a crisis of faith, if you like, in previously convinced Christians?
I've never come across that, personally. I have come across the opposite, where people have found, strangely, in these difficult circumstances, where they have found something within themselves that says, what is the meaning of life? Why am I here? What contribution can I make? And they generously and selflessly reach out to others over and beyond the reason why they are there. For example, there's nothing more than our service people like to do with them when the opportunity presents itself to get involved in some local charity work, particularly if it is again among children and young people, because obviously they're deprived of access to their own children and families while they are away. And you'll find them going out and about among the people of, say, Basra. They'll visit a local school, they'll paint it, renovate it, add a children's playground, and they'll spend a whole day in the heat of the sun and sweat of the brow doing all these things, and they'll play football with the kids. And kids are so infectious with their good humour and their naturalness that this means a lot to them. Of course, there's the downside of it, that once or twice on the way back to base, a hidden explosive device at the side of the road has destroyed Land Rover, or lives, and or lives. And that's something, again, that's terribly disappointing to them, that they've tried to reach out to needy areas of a population, and then some others who have their own agendas, extremists, decide that they will just demolish any good that is trying to be done in that society to rebuild it.
We're talking about the challenges that all this presents to the military personnel themselves, but of course even your own chaplains dealing on a daily basis with the fallout from this, it must lead to a certain degree of burnout, doesn't it, or difficulties for your own chaplains who need in some way to be supported in this challenging work.
Yes, it's as demanding for them as it is for your ordinary serviceman and woman. And we are very privileged to be allowed into the lives of our servicemen and women, to accompany them more often now than ever before into frontline and operational situations. They appreciate our presence. In point of fact, I'm coming across more and more commanding officers who would not dream of going to Iraq or Afghanistan or any operational environment or even on exercise without having a chaplain with them, because they know what that chaplain's contribution is. It's essential that he is there to be able to say to people, as we were saying a moment ago, about atrocities that they see and the frustrations they feel, to reassure servicemen and women that they are still decent people trying to carry out decent orders issued by decent superiors, and to conduct themselves in a decent way in pursuit of a decent cause. And that needs reassuring to them quite often nowadays, and they do turn to their chaplains and to one another, because sometimes the best advisor, the best counsellor that they can rely upon is one of their own mates, and the best counsellor is the person anybody chooses to turn to and lean on. And sometimes they get through things with good humour, by turning a difficult situation into something amusing, and the adrenaline flows. But after a while, then, when they reflect upon things, they sometimes want to unload their emotions and their feelings to somebody else, and that's where our chaplains are there to help them. So the chaplains, yes, they experience strain and stress and separation from loved ones back home, the same as our servicemen and women. And I don't think any of our chaplains would stand up and claim that they are in a more difficult situation than the servicemen and women. No, they're very happy to accompany them into difficult scenarios, and they're very privileged, as I say, to be allowed into those lives and feel in some way that they are supporting them and helping them through.
Now, you're ministering, of course, to the Catholic people there in the forces, but increasingly this is an interfaith ministry, isn't it?
It has become that way. The members of other faiths are very few in number in our armed forces, but they are a significant presence, and of course they themselves are entitled to have their own ministers, stroke chaplains, if I may call them that. It's perhaps not quite the right word, but they make an enormous contribution, and we try to refer a serviceman or woman to a chaplain of their own faith if one is available and the service conditions and local circumstances permit us to find one in that area and within a certain period of time. But all chaplains nowadays are trained and gain experience in being able to deal with requests or inquiries from any serviceman and woman about most of the things that are affecting them. And we try to do that with sensitivity, try to listen rather than tell them what to do, so that they can get the thing into perspective themselves and perhaps find a way forward themselves, just with our help rather than being too directive about it.
Is it possible, do you think, to give a kind of profile of the average service man or woman today?
They are energetic, highly motivated, highly trained. They wish to put all of that at the service of other people. They want to bring about a better world. And when you go to Iraq for the second time, the third time, the fourth time, it is becoming more difficult to remain focused. But they do feel that they are making a contribution to improvements in that country, despite many setbacks, despite a lot of resistance. But that those setbacks and the resistance come from a comparatively small group of extremists, of those who have their own agendas, of those who would prefer anarchy, of those who want their own powerful warlords to be the leaders of the nation, or perhaps not have any government at all. And so that they're working in that kind of environment, and they're very patient, they're very tolerant. They do not want to fire any gun or press a button on any missile. They want to be out and about among people, trying to win hearts and minds to a new way of life, and also to a way of life where they take responsibility themselves for conducting their own affairs, for electing their own national government and local representatives, so that they feel that they own their country, they own the resources and the gifts that their country has got to offer, not only to the populace of that country but to other countries as well. And that's why our people are there, and they see that, but they do feel disappointed at times that the speed of progress is so slow and so difficult and not appreciated by everybody in the country.
And also the tide of public opinion, both in Britain and in the United States, seems to be moving quite strongly against the presence of foreign troops there in Iraq, particularly also Afghanistan. This must add also strong psychological pressures, doesn't it?
It does bring pressure on reviewing our strategies for being there. It also, I think, impels us to move forward as quickly as we can. But if you look at struggles in other countries which have taken 10, 20, even 30 years to resolve and bring the different parties together into unity, we've only been in Iraq for 3 years. And in that time, we can't possibly have achieved all that's been achieved in another country over a period of 30 years. And it is difficult, I think, to satisfy everybody in the general public and those who analyse military and political situations. It's difficult to satisfy them with quick fixes. There are no quick fixes. Things take a long time to put in place and to maintain and to keep going despite the setbacks.
Finally, of course, you also minister to the families of servicemen and women back home, don't you? Is that in a way almost more difficult than actually working with the people on the front line, as it were?
Well, the chaplain obviously knows the families before the serviceman or woman from a family goes away, and so he will already be, he or she, chaplain, will already be aware of certain families that will suffer more acutely because of the separation than other families, and they will attend to them with a particular and sensitive care and try to integrate families with other families so that they get mutual support from one another, and that they use the facilities that are available in our military bases, the social facilities, the medical facilities, the chaplaincy and counselling facilities, that are means of a mutual support in these difficult times. News travels very quickly, and when service families see on television news another incident in a country overseas where they know their wife, their husband, their brother, their sister, their son or daughter is serving, they become immediately worried because that news travels more quickly than the detail of it, and they're often very anxious about, oh, could my loved one be involved in that terrible incident? And they phone one another, and they try and phone the base to get further information. But of course that comes along in much slower time, and in that period of time tensions increase, anxieties increase, and it requires a gentle, fair hand to calm things down and help people to wait and get the truth behind the news.
And my thanks there to Bishop Thomas Byrne, Bishop to the Armed Forces in Great Britain.